case for this morning, which is Dreamscape versus Affinity Network. First, we'll wait a second till. Forrester.
May it please the court, Mr. Boyle. Pleased to meet you. My name is Gary Forrester. I represent the appellant and the plaintiff, Dreamscape, in this matter. I want to emphasize as strongly as possible this is not an appeal concerned with a challenge to ANI's filed tariff. It is not such a challenge. Dreamscape has no interest whatsoever in challenging the filed tariff in any way. This appeal is all about ANI's pre-contractual misrepresentations. Accordingly, this appeal is fact-driven, and this court is considering this matter de novo. I'll be candid with you. If this court disagrees with me and concludes that Dreamscape was attempting to backdoor its complaint into an attack on the tariff, we lose. We go home and we lose. The lower court's opinion stands. The choice amounts to this. It's a choice between the well-pleaded complaint on the one hand, and the artful pleading rule on the other hand. Those two rules are advocated by one side or the other. Our submission, Dreamscape's submission, is that our complaint is well pleaded. It makes no mention of ANI's filed tariff, and it certainly is no attack on anything in the filed tariff. Our submission to you, Your Honors, is that a tariff does not give a long-distance company carte blanche to do whatever it wants and to say whatever it wants. If ANI misrepresented the truth, then it should be liable in tort under Illinois law. Same thing if it was in breach of a contract. It should be liable under Illinois law. So our position is that this case never should have been in federal court. It should have been remanded for state law considerations. There's no federal question. There's no federal preemption for the simple reason there's no attack whatsoever on ANI's rates or on the filed tariff. By analogy, if a car dealer makes a false pre-contractual claim about a car's performance or its finance charges or its lease charges, that's actionable under Illinois law, state law. Why should it be any different for a long-distance carrier? A filed tariff is not a shield. In the year 2004, this court has had occasion to consider two matters that were based on the well-pleaded complaint rule. One of those was the recent Fedor decision, where Judge Rovner gave the opinion, joined by Judge Canny. That was a cellular case, not a long-distance case. It concerned the well-pleaded complaint rule. That case held that the state court may have to refer to rates in assessing damages, but such a damages consideration does not mean that the state court becomes enmeshed in determining the reasonableness of the rates. We do not attack the rates. And Comcast was the second decision, decided only 3 months ago. Judge Easterbrook was the judge who gave the opinion. Again, he addressed the well-pleaded complaint rule in a cable modem case, and he decided there was no preemption under the FCA of 1934, the Federal Communications Act. On this basis, you don't anticipate the defendant's defense in deciding whether the complaint validly states a state law claim. You don't create your federal question by looking at the anticipated defense.
Mr. Forrester?
Yes.
I think we better talk about Boomer and Ting for a minute, because I don't see anything identified by Dreamscape in the appellate court decision in Ting that differs from the district court opinion, which we've already rejected in Boomer. So I need some help.
No, that's a I'm pleased to answer, Your Honor. I'm glad you... That was my next note card. Was Boomer and Tate. Actually, I had a detour to Kahneman, which is probably as important as any precedents, but let me answer your question about Boomer. Now, Boomer involved a state law challenge to AT&T's arbitration clause. That's what it was all about. And this court held that the Federal Communication Act continues to preempt state law even after de-tariffing in 1996 and probably even after 2001. I mean, that's arguable. But that was the holding of Boomer. But the reason I don't think that we have to get into the Boomer-Ting problem, and there's clearly a difference between the Seventh and the Ninth Circuits, that they're at odds. Ting says so. Ting says we reject Boomer. But the reason we don't have to get into that distinction in this case, in my submission, is that in Boomer you had a state law challenge to the validity of AT&T's terms and conditions, directly a challenge to the validity of the terms and conditions. In this case, we don't have such a challenge to the validity of the rates or the validity of the tariff. What we have is a challenge to what ANI did before the contract. They said things before the contract that were false.
Are you saying that you are in no way challenging anything involving the rates, terms, or conditions of the contract itself?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The rates could be...
That's your argument.
That is our argument. The rates fixed by ANI could be $10 a minute or some charge like $100 a minute. What we're saying is they come to our consumers and say, we're only going to charge you $1 a minute. And that pre-contractual representation is false. It violates the Illinois Consumer Fraud Act. The rates are unaffected. They're still what they always were.
But those are the terms and conditions of the contract.
Well, you can't misrepresent them as our submission.
But that's the whole point.
You can charge them according to the rates and conditions.
Boomer.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I'm interrupting you. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think you have to get, Your Honor, with all respect to the Boomer-Ting distinction to decide this case, because our position is that they made pre-contractual misrepresentations, and those are liable. There's a cause of action under state law.
But since they're carried over into the contract, I mean, how much can we compartmentalize the pre-contract discussions from the contract?
I don't think that the contract gives ANI or anyone else in Illinois the right to say false things about that contract. And we say that's what happened here. Kahneman, the case I mentioned before, really makes this distinction nicely. That was a decision by Judge Posner back in 1988. It did hold that Illinois Consumer Fraud Act claims are federally preempted. But the difference was, in that case, the plaintiff mounted a challenge to the tariff itself. It was all about a challenge to the tariff itself, expressly, an attack on the tariff. Now, here's what Judge Posner said that I think is important. This is an extract from the case. The plaintiff, in effect, wanted the state court to knock out Sprint's second Friday free tariff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Knock out the tariff. He distinguished that case from the Sixth Circuit case in long-distance telecommunication litigation, which is cited in our brief. There, a carrier was accused of having misrepresented that its rates were lower than a competitor's without revealing that, unlike the competitor, it charged its customers for their uncompleted calls. So just like this, pre-contractual advertising, this was a claim of simple fraud, and its adjudication did not require determining the validity of a tariff. That's precisely what we're saying in this case.
Didn't you plead a breach of contract claim in the amended complaint also?
In the second amended complaint, we came back with a breach of contract claim based upon post-2001 billings that were made by ANI.
And are you conceding that that's preempted and are just pursuing your fraud claim?
To get to that contract claim, you probably do have to deal directly with the Boomer-Ting distinction. But...
So the answer is yes?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
With respect to that aspect of the claim, that's something that arose later on after the arbitrator had dismissed the claim and the district judge agreed. We filed an amended complaint with leave to do so and added that. That can be bifurcated, I believe, in my submission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Boyle.
May it please the court, Mr. Forrester. My name is Joseph Boyle. I'm with the law firm of Kelly, Dry, and Warren on behalf of the defendant, Affinity Network Incorporated. Your Honors, with respect to the distinction that was drawn with regard to Kahneman, it's important to note that Judge Posner, in his analysis, not only examined the issue of changing from one tariff to another, but also looked at the common law fraud claims that were brought against Sprint for, the contention was they misrepresented that this would remain in place ad infinitum, and then they simply amended the tariff. And Judge Posner said there's no difference. That claim is the same claim, and indeed characterized it as a breach of contract claim. It said once you look at the relief that they're seeking, you find that it's actually a breach of contract claim.
Mr. Boyle, if the misrepresentation in the advertisements or the alleged whatever had occurred after de-tariffing, would you regard this as a challenge to contract formation and therefore one which now can be brought under state law?
Your Honor, I would not argue that it's a challenge to contract formation because the relief that the plaintiff is seeking is not rescission of the contract, refund of what was paid, but the difference between what was advertised and what was charged, the alleged difference, and if you look at the advertisements, they do refer to the tariff and non-usage and non-transport charges, so we certainly contest that there was any misrepresentation there.
But isn't the claim essentially that the contract was based on material misrepresentations and would never have been formed if the actual rates had been disclosed?
Your Honor, I think that that is an arguable implication as to what they've pled, but importantly in Kahneman, you must not only look at what they pled, but the relief that they seek.
Yeah.
And that's the important point, because at that point in time, and Boomer addresses this and says, we still think that challenges to rates must be brought before the FCC, which I believe means that not only is the non-discrimination strand still alive after de-tariffing, But so is the non-justiciability strand. So in a situation where a person comes in and says, I paid X rate, but I should have paid Y, and I'm suing for the difference, that is really forcing a court to give that consumer a different rate than the rate that is either in the tariff or that is in the consumer, in the CSA, the customer service agreement. At that point in time, you have both a problem with non-discrimination because this customer that sued and if successful, would get a different rate. You also have the same problem with non-justiciability because the court will be looking at the practice and determining what the appropriate rate to be charged is. And I think it's important in the record, if you look at the complaints that were filed, and it was alluded to in the lower court, the relief sought, and I'll reference the court to A29. This is the original complaint, paragraph 15. As a direct and proximate result of defendant's unlawful conduct in violation of the ICFA, the plaintiff and the putative class members have sustained damages in that they were billed for long-distance services at rates in excess of the advertised and solicited rates and paid for long-distance services at rates in excess of the advertised and solicited rates. So in that situation, what they're looking for is a different rate. And in that situation, I believe that you clearly have a problem under Kahneman, and you clearly have a problem under Boomer. And that continues along in the description of the class, which was, again, is on A32. And it describes all persons and other entities who received an advertisement or solicitation as to long-distance rates from the defendant prior to becoming a customer of the defendant and from 3 years preceding the filing of the suit herein until the date of judgment herein, paid to the defendant monies for long-distance telephone service at a per-minute rate, in fact, in excess of the defendant's advertised rates for services. Again, rates completely permeate the claim. And in that situation, I believe you do have non-discrimination problems and you do have non-justiciability problems. And the same goes through in the second amended class action complaint. They're very similar claims. They're very similar relief sought. And if you look at Kahneman, it's important here because you not only need to determine exactly what it is that the plaintiff is suing under, but what is the result of the relief requested. And that's really a critical inquiry. And that inquiry in Judge Posner's decision comes in his analysis of the State Consumer Fraud Act claim, where he posits it as a misrepresentation by Sprint that this Friday's Free program would remain in place either ad infinitum or much longer than the plaintiffs contend they were led to believe. And the first thing that he says is you need to look at that for what it really is. It's a breach of contract claim. And then you need to look at it in the nature of the relief sought. And in doing so, he found that it was barred under non-justiciability and, I believe, also under non-discrimination, both of which remain alive, in my view, under Boomer. And even under the Metro East Court, I think also indicated that even post-detariffing, it believes that claims of this nature belong at the FCC. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. You have 1 minute, Mr. Forrester.
Mr. Boyle raises, correctly, the issue of the relief requested. And in the Fedor case, Judge Rovner and Judge Ganny have already dealt with precisely this point. A state court analyzing such a claim would need to refer to the rates in assessing damages, but would never examine the reasonableness of those rates. That's exactly the difference that we're advocating here. We are not looking for a different rate. We're saying that the rates that are established, let them live forever. But those rates tell you what the damages are when they make false statements about what those rates are going to be. As I hear Mr. Boyle make his submission, it seems to me he says once you have a filed rate, you can say anything you want about it. You can just mislead the community with impunity, and that cannot be the law, and that is not the law. If ANI or anyone else violates the State Consumer Fraud Act, we can bring a state law claim against them, and that's our submission. Even Boomer said that a state law consumer fraud laws had a role to play after de-tariffing, and Ting would negate de-tariffing altogether.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel for a fine presentation.